You don't want to be holding necessarily $300 million on you personally. For anyone with the $5 wrench or maybe a gun or something a bit more complicated to be able to put you in a basement and hit you with it over your head until you end up giving that password, right?
This week, we are talking about Bitcoin custody and how to keep your assets safe, the ins and outs of self-custodying your Bitcoin versus trusting a third-party custodian with a very special partner of ours, CEO of our Canadian custodial partner, Balance, George Bordianu. Enjoy. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Block Reward podcast. This week, we are joined by a special partner of the Block Rewards team, George Bordianu from Balance. Did I do that wrong?
That's awesome. You got it almost right. It's Bordianu, but nonetheless, George
Bordianu.
Is the part. So I'm Romanian by origin. Most everyone gets my name wrong, so I'm used to it. I should have picked something a bit easier.
I'll never get it wrong again. George, it's great to have you on here. We've been doing a lot of work with you guys, and we'll talk a little bit about that on the show today. But do you want to just maybe start? We can have a little introduction. Tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe an overview of what you guys do at Balance and what you're up to there.
100%. And thank you for having me here. I really appreciate the invite. I guess to make an 8 years long story short, I'm George. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Balance. You can find us on balance.ca. We're Canada's oldest and largest digital asset custodian. We got started around 2017. We used to be the custodian for some of the crypto trading platforms in Canada, the Newtons, the Netcoins, like back in the early days before they all got regulated as restricted dealers. And since then, we've been pushing, eventually got qualified as a custodian through a trust charter that we got from Alberta's Treasury Board and Finance late last year. Today, we custody like roughly $3 billion worth of assets, maybe a little bit more depending on the market prices. And we've obviously, with that trust charter registration, been trying to push more and more into getting into the regulated side of the market, the ETFs, the mutual funds, the registered investment advisors, and so on. Separate from that side, we do have a very interesting product called Balance Settlements aimed around immediate delivery, which is some of the work that we've been doing with the folks over at your end at Block Rewards as well.
Well, we'll talk about that. I think we'll get there. You know, as a co-founder, like, where did the idea come from, and what problem were you trying to solve when the original idea for Balance was dreamed up?
I approached Balance from the product and engineering side. I'm a computer scientist. I have a master's in computer science from McGill and spent most of my early career doing engineering at all sorts of early stage startups. Balance is my second company as a co-founder and CTO of a previous one. We ran for a couple of years in the social media space. It wasn't, a lot of founders like to, embellish or mythologized post-fact. You know, I woke up one morning and it was bright outside, and then I was like, I'm going to build a custodian. But by no means. It was one of those, early 2017, I was kind of shifting gears a bit in my career, trying to figure out a space that I'd like to spend 10, 15 years in. Let's say I was in digital media before that, dealing with stock photography and some of that. Finance seemed interesting. Crypto seemed even more interesting. It was a super nice combination of cryptography, which is, you know, the bread and butter over at Balance, and finance and regulation to some degree, which you can geek out as an engineer endlessly on. Initially, we kind of had this idea of building something that looks a bit like a robo-advisor, let's say World Simple for crypto, where, say, if you have an interest in digital assets, you could maybe pick an asset mix, say, 70% Bitcoin, 30% Ethereum, sign a contract and pay an invoice. And throughout that process, when we're trying to spin up that product, we quickly realized that we were missing the infrastructure that we needed. And namely, the infrastructure that we wanted was a custodian that can hold assets safe and that can onboard our users and give them a wallet in their name and title to each and every single one of them, because we didn't want to take title on those assets. We didn't want to pull them. We didn't want to provide custodial functions post-trade and end up being like any one of these trading platforms that eventually got regulated as broker-dealers down the road. And we called a couple of the large ones. We called Coinbase, we called Gemini, and we were hearing stuff like 1% per year in fees and $1 million minimum per wallet. Otherwise, we're too small for them to deal with. And famous last words, how hard can it be to build it? So we started building our own, pivoted into custody services exclusively late 2019. late 2018. And 7 years, 8 years later, we are the largest custodian in Canada. We're the oldest one, and the business has been looking better than ever, to be honest, like with everything that's been happening around. So it's a slow build because it is Canada, and Canada tends to be small, but we do have a unique product and unique offering. So I'm quite excited about what's coming for us next.
Yeah, and the team you put together has been really a pleasure to work with, as we've been working together over the last year. Maybe before we get, you're talking about some pretty technical terms. And so before we dive too far into the weeds on how custody, works, maybe just some general thoughts around, if we're talking about Bitcoin specifically, self-custody is a really important aspect of how the network works. And in spite of that, custodians offer a really important service, potentially a bridge, an entry point for users that maybe looks a little bit more familiar and feels safer than just downloading a wallet or ordering a USB stick from a provider and starting to really, have the responsibility of your own financial assets under your own storage. In your mind, what is the value proposition of a custodian? Where are custodians, really providing this infrastructure for tomorrow?
The concept of self-custody has obviously been around since the dawn of time. And you could self-custody your own gold not too far long ago. It was a bit easier for someone that would strip search you to find it on you, right? So, from that perspective, Bitcoin as a hard asset is a little bit easier to deal with because no one can realistically get into your head and say, get a hold of 12 words, as the metaphor kind of goes. At the end of the day, if you do self-custody, you're still dealing with it as a better asset. And for the same reason that we had gold custodians, it's the exact same reason that we ended up having Bitcoin and digital asset custodians more broadly. You don't want to be holding necessarily $300 million on you personally. For anyone with the $5 wrench or maybe a gun or something a bit more complicated to be able to put you in a basement and hit you with it over your head until you end up giving that password, right? So what's really nifty about digital assets, unlike gold or any other hard asset that you could arguably use as a store of value, you get the best of both worlds. You can combine both the physical controls around keeping something like gold safe, as well as the logical controls around securing information as part of any company that has a strong information security program. So what I mean by this is, in our case, and it's the case for most of these third-party large custodians, the key material for the offline storage, which is the strongest form of storage that we have for our clients, is generated and managed entirely offline on military-grade hardware that sits in bank-grade vaults. Now, obviously, I didn't go and, dug and build bank vaults on my own. We work with a very large provider. It's a private security firm that handles anywhere between $8 to $10 billion worth of cash pickups every 24 hours. So it's the same kind of guys that handle your cash pickups for the large scheduled banks around. And not only do I have our typical intrusion detection and protection systems, encrypt assigned schemes, firewalls, DMZs, all sorts of access control policies, and then let's say defense in depth protections around the key material. But then the key material itself sits in a bank vault that is managed and access controlled by armed guards 24/7, 365. So if an attacker were to break in, let's say you don't want to pull an Ocean's 11 type of heist, you break into one of those bank vaults, you're going to have to kill, a few dozen people along the way, easy, break through all sorts of security controls. At the end of the day, you're going to find pallets of cash and gold bullion and rare precious metals on the floor, which are a lot easier to take than some electronic device that sits somewhere in a corner, which with the device in and of its own, you don't be able to do anything because you cannot exfiltrate the key material. You cannot operate the device unless you have various credentials, which we have within our organization as well as outside, but across various quorums. So where I'm going with this is, once again, gold, you put it in a vault and you secure it with armed guards, but at the end of the day, if someone bypasses all those physical controls, they can get to it. An information security system, say you have a hot wallet or a browser extension or like a mobile wallet that you've set up or a MetaMask wallet. If someone bypasses all of those firewalls and security protections that you have around it, they can get to the key material and drain it. In the case of our offline storage, you have to do both. So once again, let's say from my perspective as a custodian at Balance, we do self-custody because we're the ones that have possession of the key material. But the way that we've architected our system and we've put these controls in place, no one individual, myself included, or the chief technology officer included, or the security officer of the corporation included, or all of the board, or all of the co-founders, no such group of individuals has possession over the assets or access over the assets in and of their own. You know, I'm a fairly public figure. I go on the event circuit. I speak on panels. I speak at events. There's no point in chasing me around the room. There's nothing I can do for you. You know, if you take me at gunpoint, if you take the rest of our employees at gunpoint and somehow manage to break into a bank vault, we still wouldn't be able to do anything for you. So this is the type of security that you can get with a third-party custodian that has their ducks in order versus the type of security that you can have with a self-custody solution, which granted can get quite complicated, you know, with ledger devices and wallets where effectively you etch your words into a physical metal plate, maybe put that in a safety deposit box. But at the end of the day, someone with enough resources and a little bit of time targeting you would probably be able to get into it. Whereas in our particular case, like you'd really have to go the Ocean's 11 type of route. And once again, to anyone that's interested, I would just say, just target the vault, get into the vault and take whatever's on the floor and don't worry about the crypto part because you're going to be walking out a billionaire if you manage to pull that heist without having to worry about the digital asset part of it. So hope this makes sense.
Yeah, I'm always a fan just in general of your colorful analogies. And I'm also a personal fan of the Ocean's 11 movies. So I'm following you loud and clear.
It really does, sound silly, but this is what we spend our time on. The multiple hostages at gunpoint with breaking into bank vault, those are the types of scenarios that we try to mitigate risk against. That's our problem.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is why it's an interesting conversation because, you know, people who would be trying to evaluate these services are trying to understand, you know, the safety and risk profile of doing this with a third party versus doing it on their own. And so, you know, I think it's very helpful to understand the level of rigor and detail that goes into how you guys game out different scenarios like this.
Right. And I mean, I'm not saying don't do self-custody because it's obviously there's a point in doing self-custody, but the same way that you wouldn't keep your network in cash in your wallet, you wouldn't keep all of your Bitcoin in yourself in physical possession. Take into self-custody as much as you'd want, whenever you'd want it. You know, like maybe you're traveling somewhere, or maybe you want to have a particular amount that you wouldn't want anyone, including the third-party custodian, to be able to get into. You know, but past that, it's effectively a softer version of not your keys, not your coins. The way I see it and the way, let's say, the contract law sees it, it's not your legal title, not your coins. So this is what we're offering. We'll take care over the, you know, let's say more scary part of it, which is the security part of it, the backup, the disaster recovery, the succession planning, the assurance around it. And you get to have the full title over the assets, registered and beneficial, so you can have them on your balance sheet, so you can borrow against them. So you can treat them as collateral and take them into self-custody whenever you'd want.
This is, what you're talking about here is a fairly complex thing and maybe worth walking through at like 2 miles an hour. You guys have, you know, I was a fan of your analogy around barrels of oil. So you built this different way of thinking about how the assets are titled. And maybe you could just, share a little bit about how that works.
So let's say, historically speaking, if you wanted to hold assets at a custodian, and when I say custodian, I don't mean one of these exchanges like Coinbase Pro or, you know, Kraken Canada. I mean Coinbase Custody or BitGo Custody or someone with an actual trust charter where you have the assets. As a retail investor with a few $1,000s worth of crypto assets, they typically wouldn't bother onboarding you and passing you through KYC AML and dealing with putting agreements in place and so on. These types of custodial solutions are typically built for institutions. Unless the client comes over with $15, $20, $25 million, it doesn't really move the needle. Now, what we've been working for many years over at Balance, and once again, this is kind of the inception of the company, how it all got started. We were looking for a solution where I can literally give a wallet to a retail investor that he can have legal title over. We've built a system where at scale, we can create wallets, let's say hundreds of thousands to literally millions. And we did test the system with millions of wallets, by the way, and have their wallet balances kept up to date, have the transaction histories kept up to date, have the key material backed up, audited, and kept up to date throughout. And then instead of as a retail investor going to a trading platform where you're not really buying the Bitcoin, but you're buying a claim on their platform, a contract to buy, sell, and hold the Bitcoin through them. Now, I'll make a quick, you know, pin on this because I'll get back to it later. Or alternatively, buying an ETF or a share of a fund, which is the same type of scenario. At the end of the day, you're not really holding the asset. You're holding a paper version of the asset. You're holding a claim onto someone that has a pile of the asset at some point. And obviously, there's a little bit of dilution along the way because they'll be taking some fees. They'll be doing some stuff in order to give you access to that product. We have a product over at Balance, which through block rewards and similar types of platforms like Bow Valley Credit Union more recently that get it, we are offering retail investors for the first time around the ability to hold the actual Bitcoin and not a paper version of the Bitcoin in a wallet with their name and title, even if that wallet is in the possession of a third-party custodian, namely Balance, versus them having to deal with setting up a Ledger device or a MetaMask wallet or anything of the sorts. It might sound like a distinction without a difference for the folks in the room that I'm too sophisticated. What's the issue with me, say, buying my Bitcoin on ShadePay or on Wealthsimple Crypto and holding it on their platform? It gets a bit more interesting once you start wanting to do something with that asset. So one is withdrawing it in self-custody, but second, staking it, borrowing against it, participating in the decentralized finance economy. There are staking solutions these days, even for Bitcoin. I'm not encouraging anyone to do anything of the sorts. What I'm trying to say is, with a solution like ours, where you have a wallet in your own name and title, you have full control over the asset, and you get to pick what you want to do with it, versus going through one of the centralized platforms where, say, if you stake your assets through centralized CTP, they might end up taking 30 to 40% of the staking rewards that they're generating with your own assets. Now, I'm not saying that the platform operators shouldn't obviously take a fee for their services, but 30 to 40% sounds a little bit much for me. So step number one, the way I see it, is getting a wallet in the hands of every single Canadian that they own the assets in. Step number two would be enabling access to all sorts of services, including payroll benefits, for example, through companies such as Block Rewards, so they can accumulate Bitcoin, real Bitcoin, and not a paper version of it, where if some company goes insolvent, they effectively end up owning a claim on someone's balance sheet.
Yeah, and this is exactly it. We feel that our mission is to reach as many employees and employers as possible. And I would say, objectively, the most difficult entry point or the biggest roadblock for both the company thinking about paying people or enabling a conversion of wage into Bitcoin, or an employee's willingness to participate or invest in these things, is the fear around custody. And what if it goes wrong? And this is where, kind of getting back to earlier part of the conversation, I think, there have been high profile stories in the US where custodians have made mistakes too. And so it's not, there is sort of no zero risk solution, I guess. But ultimately, to your point about a wallet for every Canadian, we're in a transition period where we're trying to onboard as many people as possible and do it in a way that is helps people feel comfortable.
I see it as an intermediary step, let's say, or something that you'd use for a certain amount of your assets. No one says that you need to do self-custody exclusively or need to use a custodian exclusively. There are tools for various use cases. And look, to your point, there's no free lunch. There's obviously counterparty risk and there's fraud risk on us as a custodian. And the same, listener might have the same question. Why should I be trusting George and Balance? And how do I know that in the event of a bankruptcy, am I going to end up with a claim against their balance sheet rather than a claim against some regular broker dealer somewhere that, is under Zero's oversight? The core distinction, which is important to get, is as a custodian, we operate as a bailee for reward. Meaning that even though we take possession over the asset, once again, the full legal title, registered and beneficial of the asset, sits with the client. The assets are not on our balance sheet. I do have a contingent liability on our audited financials because we do secure those assets. So obviously, we take risk with regards to it. However, God forbid, if we end up becoming insolvent or we run out of business or we get bored of running balance in 3-4 years from now, in the event of an insolvency, no creditor would ever have a claim against client assets. The trustee would get appointed, that the estate would go into receivership, and then the trustee would come over and say, you get your asset back, you get your asset back, you get your asset back. All the client assets go back to the current and rightful owners, and then whatever is left, if there's anything left, is going to be used to service creditor claims. That's clear as day in Canada, and this picture gets a little bit more muddy in the United States and some other jurisdictions. You know, even in the case of trust corporations, which is what we've seen with bankruptcies like Prime Trust and so on. So that's one of the advantages of using a custodian. That's one of the advantages of using a Canadian custodian. And, you know, my point is, if you have a meaningful amount of assets, it'd be anything that's over $100,000 or anything that you want to keep on you personally at all times, who would you rather trust with securing and backing up that key material and making sure that you can access them? Yourself through reading articles on Wikipedia and going through online guides, or someone like us, which literally we have an entire company and we've spent the last 8 years of our life with various auditors. We're SOC 1 certified, SOC 2 certified. We have a trust subsidiary. We've had the Treasury Board and Finance of Alberta come over for extensive on-site visits, seeing our system operate from end to end. You know, like our entire business and our entire job on a day-to-day is built around securing your assets. I'd much rather trust us, to be honest. And, you know, I do kind of put, have my own skin in the game as far as my own personal assets go. I do keep them over at balance. So
maybe I'd love to ask you your thoughts a little bit more broadly. You mentioned the possibility of using digital assets as collateral. And this is something that has been in the U.S. news over the last little while. It was an announcement about the U.S. two largest mortgage lenders, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are going to have to accept Bitcoin as collateral for mortgage applications in the U.S. in the near future. And you know, as a custodian, what is your thought about the emerging like application of Bitcoin as a form of collateral in traditional, you know, financial and how we think about traditional financial offerings?
Not to sound too much like Michael Saylor, but it is pristine collateral the way I see it. It really doesn't get any better with respect to what you'd want from collateral, the ability to easily move it, physically settle within minutes and for a couple of cents. It's mind-blowing to me, to be honest, that in Canada we're taking such a long time, you know, versus what we're seeing in some jurisdictions, even the US, as far as adjusting our legal and regulatory frameworks and our frameworks around how the asset is being treated and how the asset is being taxed. Yet another advantage of using a custodian, once again, and having a wallet in your name and title and holding the actual Bitcoin versus holding paper Bitcoin on a trading platform or on some as part of an investment fund, if and when these rules eventually get updated, which I don't expect it'll take much longer, even in Canada, you will effectively be able to come to us as a custodian and say, can I get an attestation of how much I hold in custody with you and how many assets I hold title of? And that should be sufficient for you to demonstrate, for example, to a mortgage lender that you have enough collateral for them to extend the loan. And I'm not just saying it for the sake of saying it. I'm saying it because we do have regulated clients, for example, from the United States today, which have their own auditors and regulatory agencies, which come to us on a frequent basis to ask for those kind of attestations. You know, we have registered investment advisors, for example, that work for us, that are registered with the National Futures Association over in the US. The National Futures Association around them comes over as part of their own desk examinations to ask for attestations with respect to how many assets those clients hold with us. If an attestation is good enough for a regulatory body over in the United States, it should be good enough for a mortgage originator over here to give you a loan against and recognize those as being real assets. There's tons of liquidity. It's a huge asset class. It's a $4 trillion asset class if you count everything else around Bitcoin. And it really is time for everyone to move. And when you see JP Morgan even coming out and saying publicly that they're going to be opening up a lending desk, then you know that it's time to put all those tunes to rest around we're not entirely sure what the asset is and what the fundamentals are and whether it has any sort of value and recognize it for what it is, which is, in my personal view, hard money. The digital commodity is something that's scarce, that's hard to mine, that definitely retains its value with a very liquid market and that could be used as collateral for lending.
But then what's your personal take on what the evolution of custody might look like over the next sort of 5 years? Like, how different is this going to be? And you know, do you have any hot takes on what people might expect to be normal by the end of the decade?
It's never a done job. Security is a process. Anyone that's working in IT is going to tell you this. So I'm not saying anything too groundbreaking here. But there's definitely something to be said about, let's say, quantum proofness of some of these systems. It sounds a little bit far-fetched and out there. Like even today, I am kind of keeping an eye out on the current state of research and the practicality of some of those. To me, like when that dam eventually breaks, it'll be the same as with the AI dam. You know, with all of these AI applications are kind of gimmicky, and yeah, we get logistic regression and we get support vector machines, and all of a sudden, deep learning and large language model blow up, and now everyone has a ChatGPT subscription and they use it more often than Google. It'll be a little bit of the same with respect to quantum computing and, you know, some of those applications. It will start in niche areas like military use and some of the, you know, let's say the heavy specialized research. And then eventually, once it gets into consumer applications, like we're all going to have to update a lot of systems, including some of the core protocols behind the internet. And definitely some of the core protocols around public key cryptography, which is what a lot of these blockchain-based systems rely on. I can't tell you I have a crystal ball and I can't have necessarily a great solution for it. There's lots of custodians out there which kind of pitch you on quantum proof or quantum safe systems. It's a bit more smoke and mirrors than actual substance in my view right now. I could be making some of the same claims given how we've implemented our technology and how our systems work in the back end. Still very, very early on, but that is probably the biggest challenge to some of these blockchain-based systems that we're going to see in the next, let's say, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It definitely seems like a big, like, unknown, and just a huge buzzword. Like, you know, like, you do hear a lot of, quantum comes up a lot, and who knows when, even, right? It could be 5 years, could be 20.
It might sound like, when I say 15, 20 years, it might sound like I'm giving a non-answer. I'm like, what does that even mean? Having been in business for 8, like, time goes by really quick. And if you're a particularly our type of organization, which we hope that will definitely be here in 15, 20 years from now, and will only be bigger and be piling more and more assets, that's definitely something that we don't want to be caught unprepared when it does arrive. You know, so these types of initiatives just kind of give an idea in terms of how we work. It's safety first. Like, we obviously can't be doing continuous deployment or anything of the sort like you do with a standard web application. So usually once every 12 months, we release a major version of our backend system, whatever ends up being put in scope, and then we roll it out, and then we test it out gradually over a couple of months across some of our offline HSMs, and then in time it gets deployed across the entire fleet of offline HSMs. So it's usually, let's say, 12 months to develop a new version of our backend, 6 to 8 months to roll it out across the entire offline HSM fleet, including all the QA and testing necessary. So, you know, like, if it takes us, let's say, 18 to 24 months to roll out a major version of our custody system, if with something like quantum, where you might need 18 to 24 months to develop whatever might be making it in scope for that rollout, the work needs to start 3-4 years in advance. So that's why we're keeping a very close eye on some of those developments.
There's also, I saw a news article this week in the National Post that was talking about the recent sale of a Canadian crypto company called WonderFi. And the article was talking about the sort of exodus of different companies in the space from the Canadian market and questioning whether the sale of WonderFi to an international company was kind of like, you know, should we be thinking about this like we thought about BlackBerry? And, maybe, you know, for a Canadian listener, is like, you know, what are your thoughts on the regulatory environment in Canada, the industry space in the Canadian market? Like, yeah, that's a broad question, but Penny, for your thoughts.
It's very interesting that a lot of those questions are popping up after the transaction's kind of gotten approved in principle on both ends. So it's, you know, lots of regulatory bodies are waking up and kind of figuring out that it might be a bad idea to literally hand off the biggest Canadian marketplace for digital assets that we have over to the US firm. Look, for me, it kind of drives me nuts a bit knowing the amount of talent that we have in Canada, and especially knowing that a lot of these technologies emerged right here on the ground floor at University of Waterloo and some of the areas around. It drives me nuts that we're not a leader in the space, because we really aren't, like, as a country, even on the research and then technical development front of it. Most of our talent is going away to the United States and a couple of other places. And we're still dealing with a lot of negative public perception in Canada, where people don't realize that these are the next rails for digital payments, for settling stocks and bonds, for whatever type of financial service you might want to access. And if we don't make it a mission to build this infrastructure at home and to make sure that we have our own stack from custody into clearing into settlement into trading into derivatives, we will have effectively be like handed out most of our economy over to our competitor to be able to charge us rent as much as they'd like on access to some of these services. It's absolutely insane to me. It's kind of like saying, you know what, I'm not sure about this whole stock and bond thing that's happening, and maybe we shouldn't build our own Toronto Stock Exchange, and maybe we should just all go and trade over on NASDAQ. And us not having our own stock exchange or our public marketplace or the ability to IPO a single company. This is what would have happened if we would have taken the same mindset and the same approach that we're taking today and, you know, run with that 30, 40, 50 years ago. So the issue here is we kind of had a good lead on the legal and regulatory front where we had some let's say, forward-thinking bodies which took a look at what some of the companies around were doing and said, instead of suing you for every single type of activity, we're going to come in and give you a temporary framework for you to get regulated and registered as. But then the problem is that framework hasn't really evolved and hasn't really turned into something that's bespoke, that's built from the ground up, where we put some definitions in place in terms of what's a digital commodity, what's a digital security, and what are the roles and responsibilities of the ecosystem participants. I know it's taken a long time for most jurisdictions to develop something like this. We just had the Clarity Act over the United States passed last week, which is their market structure bill. We were ahead in Canada in terms of developing a market structure bill, and we had the early frameworks of one in 2021, and we haven't developed it to date. And it's something that we're now lagging behind. It's something that we now lack, and we're seeing the consequences into the market itself, where back in 2021, we used to have 70 trading platforms around. I'm not saying we needed 70 trading platforms. All of them had a point or a segment of the market to address, but that was the liveliness of the ecosystem. And we've now gone down to 50 registered dealers, you know, each trying to kind of carve out a tiny monopoly for themselves in some particular niche. And we have one or two custodians, which in spite of lack of funding and resources, we've kind of dug deep and stuck our own ground. And we've built here over 8 years trying to put infrastructure in place that we could have built and deployed and scaled in the United States or in some other jurisdictions 5 times faster. You know, and we're now kind of trying to play catch up, and I'd like us to see us stop playing catch up and instead recognize the value of having this infrastructure at home, looking at our national instruments and reading them and applying them the way that they're already written, and putting a stop to the outflow of assets that we're having over into the United States. All of our investment funds and all of our crypto trading platforms, including WonderFi, which now is in the process of being sold over to Robinhood, are holding assets in the United States with Coinbase, BitGo, and Gemini, 15 to 20 billion worth. Sorry, if not a little bit more. So once again, 20 plus billion worth of assets, your own invested assets, Canadian retail invested assets, which are now being held over with US custodians, even though we have good viable solutions over here at home. So this is what I'm lobbying for. This is what I'm fighting for pretty much every day. And this is what I'm trying to bring front and center, both to the various regulatory bodies involved, but as well as to the Canadian public more broadly, because they need to understand that we have the technology and we have the local players over here at home that can provide you those same types of services for cheaper, for better, and with more protections in place right here in Canada without having to go over to Texas. You know?
Yeah, and that was a big consideration for us. We felt it was important for our Canadian customers to have a Canadian solution. You guys are based in Calgary, and be interested just to hear your thoughts on, you know, Alberta specifically. And it seems to be a very, you know, friendly pocket of the country.
Very good surprise. We were based out of Toronto for the last 10, 11 years, myself personally, even before I started Balance. And at some point, we needed a trust charter in order to become a qualified Canadian and US custodian so we can tap into the market that we wanted to tap in. And Alberta turned out to be the only jurisdiction in Canada that would entertain granting one to a crypto custodian. To just give a bit of context for maybe some of the listeners that aren't familiar with it, we have a federal trust charter regime The main regulator there is called OSFI, the Superintendent for Financial Institutions. They report into Finance Canada. And then there's a Loan and Trust Companies Act, which regulates those. And then we have a provincial trust framework where each province and territory has what's called the Loan and Trust Corporations Act. And these provincial trusts, sometimes you could argue that they have more flexible frameworks around some of the requirements that the registrar needs to meet. In Ontario, it's a bit of a special case because Ontario, even though it has a Loan and Trust Corporations Act, that there's no provincial trust framework. So that act effectively says in order to operate in Ontario, you have to be a federal trust under OSFI. And us being based in Ontario and operating out of Toronto, we kind of evaluated both paths in 2022 when we started working on it. On one end, we went over to OSFI. On one end, we went over to the Alberta Treasury Board and Finance, since they had already granted one of these trust charters to spin off of CoinSquare, one of the East Coast-based exchanges. And on the OSFI route, it was one of those. I mean, look, just to make a quick sidebar, there are some heavy requirements with setting up a trust. Like, it was a 2+ year process. We had to spend over $15 million, including $10 million of regulatory capital to get that approved. On the OSFI side, we, you know, to some degree, the regulator looked at us and said, look, I get it. Like, you guys are, you know, you're trying, your intent is in the right place, your mind's in the right place, but what if we come over and we ask you for $50 million of regulatory capital? What if we want to see $100, $150 million? Goes upstream, you know, like, do you have a large banking institution that's backing you up or can provide that type of backstopping? And they said, look, not really. I mean, this is the upstream, you're looking at it. And if that's what's required on the federal route for us to set up a home base in Ontario, then it makes no sense. We'd be spending 3 to 5 years and not get there. Whereas on the Alberta side, you know, I relocated here, a couple of our executives relocated here, we switched our corporate headquarters, we started hiring locally, and within 24 months is roughly what it took. The Treasury Board and Finance Minister did take us to the finish line and eventually granted us the second special purpose trust charter that was ever granted in Canada to a crypto custodian. We're a non-deposit taking institution. Once again, the full title of your assets sits with you as the client. If you are an accredited Canadian NAS investor, and you can onboard with Balanced Trust Company, which is the name of the trust subsidiary. And we don't take the assets under deposit. We don't invest. We don't relend. We don't do anything of the sorts. We are only here to provide safekeeping and to move the assets pursuant to your instructions, and that's about it. And, you know, it sounds simple, but once you go into some of those regulatory frameworks around trust and loan corporations, there's all sorts of requirements, including CDAC membership potential and so on, which made no sense. But thankfully, to the flexible framework around Alberta, we could effectively say we're not going to do any of those activities. So out of the 600 pages of laws and regulations, we're only interested in just 250. And can we please, do a custom structure in place that regulates us based on just the activities that we do? Last thing that I'll say with respect to Alberta, you know, like, I personally moved because I wanted to see the business succeed and do what was required to take us to the next stage. It turned out to be, frankly, one of the best possible moves in my life personally. I like the place, lots of infrastructure, lots of nature, people are extremely friendly, the government officials are extremely friendly, not just the ones that we deal with, but more broadly. When Alberta says that they are the most freedom-loving province over in Canada, it sounds like a slogan, but you do feel it once you're on the ground floor and you get to experience it daily. So I'm frankly not looking to move back anytime soon, and I'm very keen and intent to grow the company here. And we take a Canada-wide view. We do have clients over in the US. We will have plans to expand globally at some point, but the home base is always going to be Alberta and Calgary.
Very cool. I'd love to ask you maybe one more question before we wrap up, so our listeners can hear it sort of from the horse's mouth themselves. For our Canadian customers and what they can expect.
I didn't know also Alberta yet, but eventually.
Yeah, users of Balanced that are customers of Block Rewards. You know, maybe if you could just, you know, give us a short commercial of how the service is supported and the security that's offered and what the experience is like.
100%. And I'll make the commercial about Block Rewards, not about Balanced. And it's a very awesome commercial because I really am a believer in what you guys do. And one of the things about being independent as a company is we get to pick our clients, and you're definitely one of the clients that we wanted to work with and one of the companies that we wanted to enable to bring this to the market. With Block Rewards, if you can effectively take part in, I guess, what you call the Bitcoin savings plan, which is a very simple way to get part of your payroll deposited into Bitcoin, into a wallet, held at balance that you have the full legal title of. So think a very simple onboarding. You say, I want 5% of my payroll to be for Block Rewards to purchase Bitcoin with. And then that Bitcoin makes it into a wallet held at balance. Regulatory sidebar, not balance trust company. Unless you're an accredited or yes, Canadian investor, and then we can have a conversation. But nonetheless, you get a wallet at balance with your own name and title that the Bitcoin gets deposited automatically with every pay cycle. It's a very simple and nifty way of dollar cost averaging your purchases if that's something that you want to pursue. And then obviously Block Rewards, the Bitcoin savings plan, is their first product. They started at it. They're not going to be stopping at it. And some of the stuff that we've mentioned throughout the podcast around what we can enable now that you own your assets and you own the actual Bitcoin and not a paper version of the Bitcoin, hopefully some of those will be coming out to market in the coming months. And not to spill out more than I need to, I'll leave it to Scott to announce those as they happen.
Yeah, thank you, George. That's beautiful. And bright future ahead. Lots of different possibilities. Now that the platform is live and launched, and we're so thrilled to have been able to work with you guys along this journey and now offer this service to hopefully every Canadian employer over a long enough period of time.
100%. And we'll always be here to do the boring part, which is keeping them safe.
So I appreciate you coming on, George. It's been a pleasure. Is there any sort of final thoughts or places that we can send listeners who are looking to learn more?
I don't want to be too salesy and say balance.ca, but there's definitely, if you haven't heard of us and you want to know about what we do, you should check it out. I would stay on Block Rewards and follow you and your mission and your content, because once again, I have seen some glimpses of your roadmap and the types of products that you want to bring over to the marketplace are frankly a lot more exciting to me than what some of the neobanks or some of the entrants, let's say in Canada, that are trying to serve the more younger demographics are bringing in. Not to go to preach over here, but the crypto assets are not here to do the same thing with a different hat. They're here to provide an alternative to an existing system, with that alternative being hopefully 10 times faster, 10 times cheaper, and give you a lot more control and ownership at the end of the day as the asset owner. So this is my mission, and this is what Scott's also here to enable. So I'd highly encourage all of you to follow their journey.
Yeah, thank you, George. Hey, I appreciate the kind words, and we couldn't agree more. We're hopefully building the future that we want to see together, and it's a vision for me of a financial system that is a lot more empowering and provides users with simpler ways to think about accumulating and amassing and protecting their own wealth. And hopefully that's where we're headed.
Amen to that. As it's like this, you don't know it until you start diving in. But after having spent 8 years in financial systems, when I see some of the inner mechanics of the traditional financial system and how they work, sometimes it's absolutely egregious how bad the end user gets ripped off and nickel and dimed along the way. So hopefully we can cut some of that out.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, that's an entire another episode. We'll save that for another time. Yeah, thank you again, George. We'll wrap there. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in. And we hope to catch you next week.
Cheers. Appreciate you having me here.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.